Hello, everybody. I am here with Oshri, and he is the author and illustrator of a bunch of children's books. I have three of them here, and I just read them, actually. Actually, I read them, two of these, I reread them. I read them like twice, and because I was imagining being a parent reading it to a child, right? You would read it over and over and over again. So I was like, I'm going to read it again. And they're so profound, like being like the adult reading this, just imagining reading it to a kid. They're very conscious. I'll hand it over to you, Oshri, in a second. I just want to tell everybody about this. The child in me. So this is about like people's inner child and being able to recognize that everybody has work to do with their inner child. You know, like this is a person hugging their inner child. This one's called Earth Breathes, which is really interesting. I actually got this like 1 or 2 years ago. Oshri sent it to me. It's about breathing out the disharmony and breathing in the harmony. And then Listen to the Land. If this book is amazing, and there's more I want to say about all of these, but this book is about two flowers. They're of different colors, and they hate each other. And by the end of the book, you realize that they've never even looked at each other. They've never been able to even see each other. Mm-hmm. And it was the sunlight, the earth, the land that got them to see the unification of them both. So welcome, Oshri. I loved the impact these books have had on me in a short time.
Thank you so much. Thanks for receiving them and presenting them in that way. I really enjoyed working on them. And also just to... So two of those I illustrated, and one of them, Earth Breaths, my friend Andrea Garcia Ceballos, she illustrated that one. And interesting tangent, she lives in Spain, and my Spanish, I don't speak Spanish, and I actually think her English is pretty good, but she's not comfortable speaking English. And we have never had a full conversation, but she guts all the writing. So she used Google Translate for my words, and then she illustrated it immaculately, and then I illustrate maybe 75% of the books I put out, and then when I really love an artist's work, I'll find I'll reach out and ask if they're interested in working together. Yeah,
that's amazing. I actually this morning I was like, this book looks different. I just thought that you evolved in your art in the last year or two.
I mean, I hope so, but that's not why. Yeah.
So back to what I was saying about, like, for me, it was like, this book is like, who are you making them for? Like, are you making it for the children? Are you making them for the parent? Because I was like, this is amazing.
It's a good question. It's also something that makes it like kind of interesting and tricky and funny when I reach out to bookstores, because they don't know like where to put the book sometimes. I have this other book here. It's called Stay Alive. It's about suicide prevention. And this book, it was Andrea also illustrated it. And I thought of this book when I was going through a really dark time, essentially. And it was about 3-4 years ago, and just I was on a walk, and the thought made me laugh, like, oh, I could write a book called Don't Kill Yourself, you know. And then I was like, well, I maybe need to change the title a little bit, make it a little more like in the direction we want to go, like Stay Alive. And it was kind of a joke, but then a friend of mine, I told him about it as a joke, and he said, well, when he was in high school, he had a lot of suicidal ideations, and I should actually make the book. So I said, okay. And so when it comes to age, a lot of it's for adults, and it's also for kids. You know, there's some, like, that topic for Stay Alive, I don't recommend for kids under, like, middle school, maybe. But I always like to think that with children's books, you're writing for a child and an adult, right? If often they're being read, like exactly as you put it, you're imagining reading it to a child, right? And you're experiencing that, right, as well. And for me, when you write, when someone reads, a parent reads your book to their kid, it's very sacred. It's very honoring for me because they're literally bringing your words into the rearing of their child and into their family circle. They're welcoming your voice and your sound. So I really write it for everyone. Some of the books are definitely like The Child in Me. You could read it to a kid, but the title also kind of excludes that it's a children's book. Because, like, a child would say, well, like, of course, like, there's a child in me. I am a child. So, but also, and just tell me if I'm getting too off the rails here, but I feel like not only are we facing, like, quite serious challenges with wellness with youth and mental health, but there's also this, I mean, adults aren't, by and large, a lot of adults aren't doing great either. And there's an ability through the medium of children's books to reach that child inside because it's so distilled. You know, I'm just thinking out loud about like the memes and half the stuff people send each other online on Instagram. It's often not like a big article. There's a need to be able to distill information with the overload that we receive in this era, that I feel like children's books are just a great medium to put profound messages in. And it's also a great exercise for me to say, like, what do I really mean? Because I can't take 100 or 200, 300 pages to write this. I have to distill this message. And I have to find the visuals that are going to help help ingrain it as well. And so it's kind of it's an interesting exercise, an interesting question. Who are they for? I'd say, I like to say ages 2 to 202.
202. Yeah, because like you said, distill it down. It's the simplicity of the message. I mean, they're short, right? It takes 5 to 15 or 20 minutes to read it. And then there's the pictures and there's so much information. And then there's even like the multidimensionality of it. There's what the words literally mean. And then there's what it means to the reader.
Sure.
And the potential for reflection on these messages are really profound. And so I'm super happy that you're here doing this and that you're here doing this interview.
Yeah.
What got you into this?
Yeah. So I've been an artist my whole life. And, you know, since I was a little kid, I've loved to draw, create, sculpt. When I was in my early, I mean, this is distillation because I feel also itself because I feel like, you know, when we're doing something that we feel like this could be what we end up doing the rest of our lives, then there's a big story and many, many, like, paths that lead into it. I also love writing, and I've written, I loved creative writing, rhyming. My mom is a children's book, she's a children's book enthusiast. She taught second grade for, like, 24 years, so she would collect children's books. I didn't really imagine, like, it wasn't when I was in high school. I had some envisionings that I would love to write, like something like a children's book for adults. You know, and there's this kind of subtle, vague visioning that happened for me, but it wasn't. It's the kind of thing where it's like, well, as long as that happens sometime before I check out of this life, then that's enough. You know, it wasn't like I could envision enough momentum and energy in that I could say, well, like, okay, this is, I'm creating a lot of these books at full speed and life energy. So take it to like my mid-early 20s and, I'm at my first office job, first and only, at which I burned out of. Believe it or not, I burned out of this job pretty quickly. I changed gear. And I'm remembering myself like showing up in a suit, you know, with a briefcase and kind of laughing at myself in the elevator alone, having that moment like I could still walk out. And it didn't take me too long to eventually leave that. But once I, there was a kind of compressed experience that I had there. This was about 13, 14 years ago, that I came out saying, I'm just going to focus on my art and my music now, very, like, very dogmatically, focusedly. And for a couple of years, I really hustled to see if, like, what I could do in the art world and to try to get into gallery spaces. And I was also a guerrilla artist, so what can I do there? After a couple of years, I became pretty disillusioned with what art world meant. But alongside that, I had started doing these daily drawings. So this was about 11 to 12 years ago. I started doing daily visual and word art and kept that up. So there's a part of me that said, I have to, I don't know what I can do with this in this art world, but I knew I want a sense of like a sense of mastery, whatever that means. And I know to do that, you have to be consistent. So I thought like, well, what's the like laziest thing I could do every day? And I'd be like, okay, a little drawing, a little picture. Sometimes it could take me an hour, but it might take me 2 or 3 minutes too. And either way, oh yeah, there's my Instagram. And either way, I'm just going to commit to daily creating. So I started getting kind of disillusioned in the art world and life took some turns. I started, I think when we met, I was operating my food business. But I was still doing these daily drawings and really metabolizing, like, well, what do I want to use my art for? And what do I have the most intrinsic motivation for? Because it wasn't getting into galleries. I just didn't have the motivation that it would have taken. Didn't seem very interesting. And over a couple of years, it became like, I did one illustrated book about my college oboe teacher, my music teacher's lessons. So he brought so much wisdom into music and connecting it with life and how to play the oboe. And he had played with the New York Phil for 27 years. So I just felt I had to create this little cute little book about that. So I did that and that was fun. I put it aside a few years. And so I had some like experience and I made a book. It was fulfilling at an intrinsic level. And then over time, this question, what I know I want to keep making art, what do I want to do with it? And the answer of children's books and illustrated books just came through, was that it felt like, well, that's where potentially an artist who wants to have, who wants to relate with the human psyche and consciousness, that's where we can really touch in. And going back to that moment of a parent reading their child a book, often bringing those words in before bedtime, which, you know, as a yogi, right, like we know, like this is such a suggestive space in our consciousness. So as a parent, like, right, hopefully one of the safest people that this child has, they're reading this book right before the kid goes to sleep. And like, where else are you gonna be able to make that kind of impact? Like, what other tender, open, vulnerable? So for me, it's very sacred to create these. And then you're also offering something to the parent. I think if it's well done, then, you know, just like me, like if I, sometimes I read some of my books, I'm like, oh shit, I need to hear that again, you know? So like, we're not pretending that in our grown-up states that our child is necessarily always fully developed. So yeah, I'm kind of enamored in terms of how we can use just simple words, pictures, and like kind of enchanting pictures to relate to, heal the psyche, send love to it, and as expand as, you know, as your podcast is named.
The oh yeah, that's right. The so you have 47 over 4,700 posts on Instagram, yeah. which is a lot. And so you've been doing these. I remember I've been watching them evolve.
Yeah.
Probably 5-10 years now.
Yeah.
And I remember they used to be like hand drawn.
Yeah.
On like a piece of paper. And yeah. You take a picture of the piece of paper. Now they look that way, but it's digitalized.
Yeah.
And they, like you said, they each have a message. And then you mentioned that it came through. Children's books came through. Just for the audience, just so they get clarity on what you mean by that. What do you mean by that?
That's such a good question. Let me take a moment. Let me see what comes through.
Answer that. Because we're all on our journey, too.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of people trying to figure it out.
Right. And so am I. You know, so it's like there's this, right, like there's a facade of having arrived, and there's reality to that. And then there's also like, so am I. Like, I'm super excited. Like, one of my growth horizons is like sharing these. Like, I can create children's books all day. I'm not a publisher, or maybe I am, but that's like less experiential for me. So, you know, we all have our growth horizons. But going back to came through, I think you know, it's funny, we met doing yoga together, right? So I think you breathe, and you keep breathing as your life is happening. And, you know, like Thich Nhat Hanh, right, he'll talk about the insight, that the mindful breathing leads to insight. So come through for me when it feels like something like a life project or the big part of a life project, it's that insight that, okay, when I explain like deep breathing to kids, right, because when I do mindfulness with kids, they ask, why we breathe all the time, right? Why do we need to practice breathing, right? So the answer is like you're activating a different part of your brain with this intentionally deep breath. That's able to affect your thoughts, in your behaviors, in your feelings. So coming through for me is when, and we can honor all dimensions and parts of ourselves. So coming through is like one, between one to many levels deeper than it came through that I need to go get some hash browns and put them in a toaster. Like, you know, like, and coming through is I had an idea. My imagination felt some inspiration to do whatever. That's what coming through. But you're doing it in a way that your breath is connected to it. And it feels somehow that you're metabolizing a reason for why, or at least a purpose for why we're on this planet right now.
There's three specific pages in these books that I wanted to just read, if you don't mind. It's not giving away the whole book.
Oh, no. But there's, give it away. Yeah.
All right. So there's, and from this book, Earth Breathes, it's this page that says, after all, separating earth, and you spell out earth, right? E-A-R-T-H. Yeah. Separating earth from breath is but a B. Because B is the only thing, the only letter that's different from breath and earth, right? So after all, separating earth and breath is but a B. And I'm calling and counting on you to find a new way to be. And then there's a picture of this person, entity type figure breathing into the earth, which actually, it's the visual of what you're saying, right? You're intending on, you gave a story of intending on a a pass, and then it was breathed into you. The question is, do you breathe it in, or does something else breathe it into you?
I don't know.
So I also want to give you a compliment, because this is a book. How long have you been making these books for?
The first one I did about 10, 11 years ago, but then I really got kind of built some momentum about the last 3, 4 years.
Okay. And so do they all, because what I noticed of these books, because you sent me that one a few years ago.
Yeah.
And then in these books, there's also something different besides the art, which is in the end, there's practices.
Yeah.
Super simple practices.
Yes.
And this one, The Child in Me, which, by the way, the page that stuck up, it says this. I'm going to give everyone a visual before I read it.
Yeah.
But it says, a grown-up who's bossy or mean may often be stressed. Oh, no. Sorry. A grown-up who's bossy or mean may often be steered by their inner teen or even an infant in the process of weaning. Which when I was like, wow, like, because I went to school for psychology, right? So I know about like the latency phase and like the phases that children go through when they're developing their concept of the world, and that phase where they're breastfeeding is like a very important phase for people to build their concept of reality around.
Yeah.
And that depends on like how long they were breastfed, what the emotional states of the mom was, all of that stuff goes into that.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, a growing up who's bossy or mean. So basically somebody who's being bossy or mean, and you're essentially saying like, it's not really them. It's something, it could have been something that happened to them when they were younger.
Yeah.
But, so this book isn't just about other people. It's also about self. And in the very end of this, which I think is amazing, there's several pages where you say it. You're supposed to record yourself saying a guided meditation that Oshri put in here.
Yeah. And that's not that the meditation is by my friend Orly, who we've created it together.
Orly.
Yeah. Orly Narki. So she's a. Or what were you going to say? I don't want to get off.
Oh, no. Yeah. So like that, like just that I haven't done it, right? Because you actually just sent me, I just got these books in the mail yesterday.
Yeah.
But these two. But just reading through it, it's just like, man, this is so awesome to just be in the package of a children's book.
Yeah. Yeah, it felt special. And she, Orly is a powerful. What's kind of cool about each of these books, they're literally like a chunk of my life and relationship, like with different people. It's kind of a fun way of encapsulating relationships like that one. So Orly and I met almost a year ago, and she's a medium. So if anyone is looking to communicate with those who are not in their body anymore, like Orly, I mean, shoot, she did something impromptu where she was just driving in the car and she brought it down. It was powerful. So she had her hand in this, and it's very much in the spirit of collaboration with all of them, pretty much.
That was amazing. And this book, I mean, I mentioned it already. It's like when the flowers turn to look at each other and they realize like they have never even seen the beauty that is one another.
Yeah.
And could you speak a little bit about like what inspired this? Because I see a lot of subcontext in between, you know, like the different colored flowers, hating each other.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I have, and when I wrote that book, I was crying most of the time, like a good chunk of the time I was in tears, and I wrote most of it in a day. After doing like a fire and music circle, and I stayed home the rest of the day, and it kind of flowed out. And each of the elements, one at a time, their voices came through. And It was a lot. So yeah, these are two flowers in constant antagonism, right? And I have a lot of family in the Middle East, essentially. I dedicated that book to one of my best friends and one of my best brothers, Ahmed, who's he's Palestinian, grew up in West Virginia here. You know, my family is Iraqi and Iraqi, Israeli, Russian, Georgian, American, you know, so I'm kind of a mutt. And, you know, this is one of my best friends from college. We've known each other now about 15 years. And he's a person who, if I had to select someone who I felt like what it would be like to hang out with a twin, like that's probably him, right? And it just made me so sad, like these months where, oh, wow, like all these social, political, economic dynamics that aren't even, that we can't touch in a direct way, could impact our friendship just because of how, and it hasn't in our, and it's, you know, we're going to meet up next week actually, but just to see like the disconnect between individuals and then entire groups of people, because there's this, we don't see that, right? We're talking about that oneness. We don't experience it when we're in a place of fear, right? When there's only certain parts of our brain being activated and not others. It's very difficult. The reality that we're constructing, it's really shitty. It's real shitty for everyone, you know? And there's a line in that poem and in that book that gets repeated. I love to share, which is, I don't memorize all my books, but some parts I do, they do end up sticking in me. And that's when I feel, because this is when the flowers are starting to get it, right? They've heard all of this relational wisdom of the different elements and they're starting to get it. And they say, when I feel into my roots, I see that enough of you is part of me. And enough of me is part of you, that if I refuse to care for you, I refuse to care about me too. So that is what I feel is like what we are facing as a species. I believe mm-hmm. that story distills a lot of what is needed as a salve. It doesn't have to be through that story, but as a recognition that, hey, if we, like, violence is cyclic, there's no way to make it not that way. Every war is done to be the last one, to end whatever the dynamics have been that people are trying to get rid of. You know, every war is kind of marketed that way. And this isn't, it's not a matter of sides at all, because you just go back. You go back and you point fingers in different directions and all around. Different directions, you point fingers in different dimensions. And also, I do think maybe my specific background plays into story. And tell me when I'm going like too much into it, but
this is about you.
Okay,
keep it rolling.
Cool. Well, you know, my dad grew up. My dad was born in Baghdad, grew up there for 7 years. Then he moved to Israel, where he lived in, they called it something else, but it was essentially a refugee camp. And then he moved here when he was in his mid-late 20s. And he wrote some very controversial stuff. He also wrote some stuff that was not, you know, he's had a long literary and academic career. And but I do think that when you come in to, you know, so here I was born, like, and I just have had it fine here. You know, I didn't have to move when I was right. 7 and grow up in a refugee camp and all that stuff. But I think it helps you can be a bridge when you've had some element of your foundational experience that is not like, I don't know what else to say, like Oscar Mayer, or like, you know, just like Lunchables, like each thing in its own little perfect container. To the degree that we have kind of a divergent experience, there's a possibility, but you have opportunities to metabolize through yoga, through meditation, through mindfulness, through therapy, whatever mode is, then you have an opportunity to see things, to make those bridges, to make, you know, you're gonna have a full Tupperware, not just Lunchables pockets, not just like little compartments, because you have to. And just to close out this question, which I think is, it's also important, like it goes into listening to the land. How do we live together as living beings who are made out of the same soil, ultimately, of the same planet, sometimes of the same region, sometimes not. And like, we can argue about that, or we can recognize that the preciousness of it, the preciousness of life. And we're experiencing something where I think of it like a, maybe there's a children's book in here somewhere, but I think about it like a Petri dish that, okay, for thousands of years, anything that moved along, like anything that moved in this Petri dish, it was like, you know, I don't know how fast little bacteria and shit move, but like, it's probably pretty slow, right? So that cultural and ethnic diffusion is going to happen like kind of slower, right? And then in the last 100 to 150 years, it's like someone took this Petri dish and just shook the fuck out of it. And like, everyone's all over the place. You know, the fact that you and me are, I don't know where your ancestry is from. The fact that we're here speaking English in mm-hmm. different counties in California, you know, it's just kind of amazing. There's beautiful and incredible potential to it. And it's like, it's something to metabolize, because we come into it with histories, and we come into it with traumas. And that's why it's important to have like safe spaces, like created just to share. Well, what are you doing on Earth at this moment? That after and while the Petri dish is just being shaken, after thousands of years of it not being.
The amount of resonance about my concept of reality and this book, Listen to the Land, A Tale of Two Flowers, because you were just touching with the roots, touching and the elements being the voice of wisdom. And essentially, then the outcome of that wisdom is realizing that we're made of the same thing. We're not so separate after all.
Yeah.
This is the new paradigm where things like war and rape and the problems that we're seeing now, where we're, as humans, like as a human species, the solutions we're coming up with is just do more of what the other person is doing to you. If they're being violent to you, then you be more violent to them.
Yeah.
And the only way that stops is the realization that there's a unity, because as you said in that line, and I don't remember the exact words, but if I'm harming you, then I'm harming me.
Yeah. Yeah.
That, like, overnight, if we could feel each other and recognize that we're all one, then everything changes. That's where the shift happens.
100%. And I appreciate your posts. You've done different posts that that kind of distill that message in beautiful ways. I remember one you did recently about, like, I think you gave away, like, some vehicles or something. I remember one from a while ago. Was it just you talking about how to decide like what to give in a tip, you know, like do you not give a good tip because a waiter's been a jerk, or do you maybe say like, this waiter's been a jerk, maybe he needs a big tip, like, you know, like, and if I can provide that, you know, then that's who I'm gonna be. And so yeah, I feel that resonance too, and I felt that in your presentation, work and voice.
Yeah.
And I do want to add that there's another practice at the end of that book as well, which I mean, I'm all about meditation, and it's just so simple and profound. Just about like how to feel that unity with somebody else if you're sort of in the same room as them, which is and it the way that it ties into the book too is really
which
cool.
Which one stuck out to you?
It was where you ground each other and then you're connecting your roots.
Yeah, you feel your roots. Yeah. It's fun because I started doing that. I did that a little bit, but sometimes the book can inspire the practice too. So I start doing that more now, like in literally like we could do that. Or I, you know, one of us or both. And like as we're talking, like my feet are on the floor and I'm sensing in my, you know, in my inner world, like I have roots. At some point they reach Ra's feet, you know, and his roots somewhere in the earth. You know, and you can remember that even when like you're having a random conversation. You know, if you're talking about family members and it's charged, you can actually use your physical body, right? And just my feet are on the floor. I know they have roots and my roots. And at some point they touch. And just remembering that and then having an embodiment of it through your awareness of your feet is like, it can be very powerful. It can really shift communicative and relational energies. Yeah.
I love the word embodiment to explain that as opposed to imagination. I usually use the word imagination, but I like how you just pronounced, like just actually embody the realization of this.
That's
of this connection.
Yeah.
And I've thought about that in terms of like connecting in a romantic way, mm-hmm. but I've never ever considered just doing that with everybody. Like just getting that right. flow, that current going up from your root
right.
and then even higher into your heart, into your higher centers.
Yeah. Well, it's usually when we're not feeling it intuitively that we need to remember it or that it behooves us to remember it, right? It's like, because, you know, if you're talking to someone who you have a good relationship with already, you know, you don't necessarily need to, you know, it's there. That's there. You're embodying that without even thinking about it. But when it's when like, oh, I'm at odds with this person, and all I'm seeing
right.
is like how we're at odds, then it can actually help to say, oh, and then you can bring in that energy that you know intuitively. You can relate to them as a friend, as a family member, someone that you would, your natural compassion comes through. Or I call, when I work with, it's an organization called NAMI, Westside Los Angeles. They're a mental health advocacy organization. They've been incredibly supportive with these books. So I give talks to high schoolers and middle schoolers about it's called Ending the Silence and how to open up about mental health and ending stigma about talking about our inner experience. And I like doing this exercise with the students about tuning into our empathic wisdom, right? Because we all, our ability to know what's going on in someone and then to make good relational communication decisions based on that. And it's a skill. Like adults aren't, you know, these are children's books but you know, like we wouldn't be going through all these emotional violence, physical violence if we felt that. And I'm not separating myself from the mass of humanity. Like as long as I'm here, like mm-hmm. my growth, like I need to get, you know, I can talk about it. Some people can talk about it quite well and not have a realized embodiment at all, you know, but they're, and maybe that's, and that can be, maybe what they're saying is still helpful, but you know, there's all sorts of reality and mixes that come through. But this is something I feel strongly that it's just an imperative to feel that oneness, that connection, that are, if I refuse to care for you, I refuse to care about me too.
Is there any little sample of tuning into the empathic wisdom that you could share with us here?
You mean like from...
From your talk, you said ending the silence and take them through a practice.
Yeah. I'll feel... I could do that, or there's something else. Something else I think we'll do.
Let's do the something else.
Let's do the something else, because this is what's bringing it up. And now I'm like, maybe I should be sharing this, because this was a meditation that I led also through Nami online mid to late October, I think it was. And, you know, you want to take 3 minutes for it or something, and just, so you're sitting, your feet are on the ground, slowing your breath, and you're allowing yourself to feel a sensation of everyone in the room. So let's just say you and me, or everyone listening to this in this context, right? Everyone listening to this supports you and wants the best for you. Then you allow yourself to feel supported by everyone in the room. As you're always coming back to your breath, prioritizing that, which isn't easy, to hold a thought and that breath focus at the same time. And it's not a critical thing if, right, we diverge, but then coming back to the breath, holding, everyone supports you. And then you're going to layer that with and amalgamate that with, you support everyone else too. You support everyone in the room. You support everyone listening to this. And you're breathing with that and allowing both of those sensations to be felt in your body. You can even, when you walk into a room, you can remember this, you know, like make a bookmark here in your body. When you walk into a room, remember that sensation. I support everyone. Everyone supports me. And keep breathing with that. And then here's where it can get a little interesting. And I don't know, this is not going to be very long. It might be more than 3 minutes. Let's see. But good. You can keep a smile to it too, right? If you support everyone, everyone supports you in the room, like, that's going to feel good. Be life-promoting. Now you're adding the awareness of your ancestors and the awareness of their ancestors in the room. Proverbial room. And all of their ancestors and your ancestors are supporting one another now, showing care. So your ancestors support all their ancestors. Their ancestors support all of your ancestors. Then all of the ancestors, yours and theirs, support you and everyone else in the room who's currently in their body right now. Their ancestors support you and that, and your ancestors support you and them. Bringing it into the breath, keeping it there, allowing, what's the sensation of that in your body, holding that and deepening into that. And here's where, first time I shared this meditation, it was everything I could do to not break down sobbing. Because then I say, I'm going to then extend that awareness to children. It could be your future children, or your current children, or just children who are in the orbit of your care. And you're imagining that you care for your children and also the children of everyone else present. You support your kids and theirs. And then they also support your kids in their own. And the ancestors are also holding care for this, for the future. Children is just future. Right? 3 and 4 dimensional, maybe 5 dimensional future. Everyone
offering that sensation of care and support and breathing into that, continuing to breathe deeply, slowly, feeling both past and present, future, and that sensorial oneness. Just going to give yourself a physical hug as you do that. Just use your arms, hug yourself within that sensation of support of all directions on the timeline and now, and meeting that in your body. Continue to breathe and allow your body to adjust to being hugged, calming yourself, and with that ancestry, and with that future, and with everyone else in the room. And then whenever you're ready, you can
continue the interview.
With those laughing.
So that to me is everything, honestly. Like, that's, you know, we look at like the Middle East and all of the story that's invested in antagonism, historical story, even biblical sometimes, right? Or scriptural stories invested in antagonism. But like, well, what if we did that? We said, hey, let's embody and practice. You're right, it is deeper than, let's realize, it's deeper than imagination, but let's realize the connection of our ancestry, right? And just feel that, wow, like, this is really precious that we're all here. It's not just precious that I'm here and you here, but it's that we're all here. And we all have that sacredness. And so, yeah, that's what I tried to put into Listen to the Land. I also have this other book I haven't sent you yet. It does touch a little on this same theme. I wrote this with a friend, James Mahaley. This is his initial idea. This is called Ockles and Wockles. And it's about these two peoples that it's dedicated to people with differences and samenesses. So right, it's about like these characters, they don't get along at all. I illustrated this one too. It was really fun, right? So just little wet slices.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, eventually, you know, it goes into how they don't get along, right? A wackle couldn't care less if an ockle has no clean water, as long as the wackle has plenty to drink. You know, all the ways that they don't treat each other well, right? Right? Ockles build tall fences to keep wackles out of Ockleville. Right. So, you know, this, and then, okay, one day the sun looked down at Earth and said, you Ockles and Wackles look very similar, right? So, right. So the sun sees it raw, right? Raw sees it.
Yeah.
Right. Right. And they both get pissed about that, of course. So both groups. So it gets really spooky and fun. So the, you know, the Ockles, they try to, they go to the, they say, they decide that the sun needs glasses, sunglasses, to see better. So takes off with a pair of sunglasses for the sun, right? So the sun can see better, right? And then the sun says basically, well, no, actually, the glasses are good and you look even more similar than before. And then the other group, they're like, well, it's because your glasses weren't very good. So they build a tower of themselves to the sun to give a new pair of glasses. You know, and then the sun's like, now, yeah, you guys are the same. I'm 100% sure now. And then, you know, they're realize, and then a girl and a boy, Ockle and Wackle, they realize, they're like, I knew it, you know? And I think there's something there. And like, children see it easily, right? Children can have, you know, sometimes, like, unfortunately, we start conditioning kids pretty young often, but children are less conditioned, more malleable, so their realization all at once, all the Ockle kids and all the Wackle kids and all the Ockle grown-ups and all the Wackle grown-ups figured it out. No matter how different they thought they were really all the same. They were all slices of the tree of life, right? So that's who they are. And, you know, then they have a dance party, and then this is the last illustration. The sun was happy. So that's, I think there's such a special opportunity for children's books, illustrated books, to have these. It's an important message, but there's a way to, right? There's a way to make it more digestible when there's humor and lightness that pads it. Right? It's not, you know, putting someone on their defenses in the same way.
I mean, it's an important time to program, too, because the program that they're getting from the TV and sports and even school is that there's conflict and it's better to win than lose. And there's always winners and losers. That's the program that they're getting at 2-year-old to basically the rest of their life.
Yeah,
that's the program that's being fed to us.
Yeah, and it's the program that the adults are embodying, right? They're acting that program out, right? Like, it's like, let me annihilate you, right? It's let me win, let me punch you harder. Even like, I mean, Marvel movies are entertaining, but it's pretty much like, let me punch you harder. Like, do you see how hard those people, like any living creature? But like after just like one punch, they would be totally like not here. But there's this like, I don't know, you know. So there's programming that comes in, and it has its own enchantment, right? Its own enchantment, because those movies are, wow, like the graphics that seeing someone in flight, like the way you do it, like it's all so enchanting. And unfortunately, there's like a hypnosis about that. It does sink in, right?
Yeah. The hyper sense, it's like sensationalized to such a degree that we're just like, we're captivated by that. We're literally captured into that.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's, so, you know, it's here's an effort, and, you know, it's a modest effort, but an authentic, a heartfelt effort to create some other kinds of enchantment with different kinds of programming. And from
amazing.
A humble way, like, was that? Oh, thank you. Yeah. Yeah. Like, I don't know. I'm not saying I know what the programming should be or is, but I know that like I do want children. And I know that, my friend Acme wants children, and I know we can do better for them. You know, I know that we can do better for them, for our kids, that we don't want in X years dealing with the same stuff, right? Another generation, or worse, or, you know, just, so how do we show up as adults, as conscious adults, saying like, and then also touching into that inner child, because the grown-ups are reading it too. And maybe we've internalized some of this programming more, but we're also, quite malleable if we allow ourselves to be.
And people can order these books. I just clicked on one. Actually, I should just share the screen here. People can order these books at Butterfly
on Books.
Butterfly on Books.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And they're not expensive. They're very humbly priced. And actually, I don't need to share the screen, but so Butterfly on Books, are they in bookstores as well?
A handful of stores, mostly they're online. That's really, I've been sharing them most. They're also on Amazon though. They're on the Barnes Noble online. So there's a handful of bookstores that have them, but it's been, here's where, I don't know, maybe this gets too much into like the back end and the weeds of it, but some of them are definitely just kids' books, some of them are not, and some are in between, and I just have to keep making them, and I'm like, okay, is eventually a formal distributor publisher going to take them in? Maybe, that could happen, but I just feel, you know, The flip side and the amazingness. Oh, Blogalog is a fun book. Yeah, isn't it amazing? I can create these books where if they were in a traditional publishing house, like, you're not going to be able to have, like, I mean, there was, I think, maybe 8 titles I was able to put out in the last maybe 5 to 6 months. That's not going to happen in a traditional publishing house. So I do appreciate just the opportunity to put it out there. But it means that, like, well, word of mouth is a big way that I end up sharing about these.
Well, yeah, 5 books for $50.
Oh, yeah.
Pretty good.
I should update that because now I've finished about, like 18 or 20. So should put, like, yeah. But anyway, yeah, I think they're quite decently priced. And they're also good on, like, Amazon and other online retailers. So, yeah, it's kind of an incredible world where, like, we have all this compression, this historical stuff we're working through. But there is an ability to, like, create, like, material and programming of consciousness and get it out there and share it in a way that there never has been before either. So that's where we're doing our best to meet that, right?
And I definitely see a possibility for you to be on more stages because this is a unique perspective of somebody who makes children's books that speak to all audiences on the topics that are difficult to touch in a politically correct and digestible manner for everybody. You're not on one side of the fence.
Yeah.
You're making it digestible for everybody. Because the sun's speaking, right?
Well, sun. And the sun. Yeah, what are you going to say? You know, it's like the sun.
Right.
The sun has like a huge smile with big teeth. So, like, what are you going to say?
Do you have a favorite book of yours?
I really do. I don't put anything out that I don't really love and that my heart is in, but do have, yeah, it's hard. But there is a fun character that's come in recently that I really like is Ami the Llama. So this came up with Nami. She's a Nami Llama, right? Deep breathing is my blanket. And I have a follow-up to that called All Kinds of Hugs. So that's kind of fun because I don't have, like, proper sequels to all of them, but there's, like, an internal series that's being developed around this character where she says, I'll just say the poem, the song. So she basically learns this song from a tree that then she flies for her life. And the song is, deep breathing is my blanket and kindness my cocoon. My deep breath weaves a magic thread through life's mysterious loom. So that's, yeah, it's fun. So I got to get you a copy of that.
It's fun.
It's really, it is, isn't it? And it's all, it encapsulates, this is also like, I mean, I don't know. I can't say favorite. This one is also, I love this. One of my friends illustrated it, Tending the Tumblin. This I was also going through, like, okay, I was going through an emotionally awful place. And I had an ulcer in my stomach for like 3 to 5 months. And in the middle of that, I'm like, this is too painful for me not to get something out of it. So I wrote this poem. I wrote this poem about the tumblin, right? And how we can, like, we have this imaginary creature, like, kind of Yoda-esque in our tummies, right? And that is our connection with our
tumblin.
So if we're feeling, like, lousy, right, then we got to connect with our tumblin. We got to take deep belly breaths, right? And then it says, okay, in times of upset, you might ask the tumblin to slowly share. And by the way, tumblin is tummy gremlin. That's how I got that word. In times of upset, you might ask the tumblin to slowly share. Will you tell me what's all the fuss about down there? And little by little, the tumblin may open up, bit by bit, telling you exactly what's up. And eventually, you can feel it out, and rubbing your belly might soothe the tumblin's pout. Without the tumblin, it would have been easy to ignore. Now you know to give care to this thing in your core. So now the tumblin's, like, meditating, right? So, so all of them are, like, a chunk of my life that I can put into words. And And like, this was such a blessing. Like, Gordon, the way he illustrated this was just, I mean, look at the detail, the character detail there that he got into. It's just like,
yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. So he worked on this for, worked on it for a couple of years. And so I don't know if I have a favorite, but I do have like very unique love for all of them, honestly. And yeah.
Okay. Next question has to do with the challenges that you've had creating this. I mean, you've manifested something that's fun, it's meaningful to you. What are the challenges? I would give you a challenge, but I just want to hear from you. Like, have you had challenges, and how did you overcome them?
Yeah, good question. Good question. When you said challenges, I thought it was going to go to life challenges. So, like, I'm going to do a little bridge. I'll circle back, you know. So, because the challenges, you know, is when you have a life challenge, it does, right, it can be called to meaning and purpose, and it can also be debilitating, depending on what point of metabolization we're privileged to experience, right? I think the challenge was, part of it was just realizing that this is, like, something I need to be doing. So when I had my food business, it was very seductive. Someone I know is like, making a lot of money. He was like, keep doing your food business, then you can use that to fund your books, you know, and all that, and maybe even do animations later. I'm like, I can, you know, I sat with it, honored, thank you for the guidance, you know, and like, who wouldn't want to be, I mean, money can be seductive, right? And like, who wouldn't want to listen? Someone has $1 million and you don't have like near that, and they're telling you this is how you make money. That can be seductive, right? Mm-hmm. And we do, like, we can idolize finance and money in just this world we live in, right? I mean, even going into the wars, like, that's a lot of the reason this shit's happening. Like, there's people that are like, they're able to send their kids off to college because and support that because, like, they designed a bomb, you know, and it's like, it's real, you know, and like, you want, like, wow, let's hold that for a minute, right? Someone is, you know, maybe it's not just the fat cats, but it's also the designers, all these people that have industries depending on them, right? Like, we want them to send their kids to college, right? But so anyway, money can be seductive. At this point with my food business, I was like, I just couldn't. I really didn't have it in me to keep making like a healthy confectioner we were doing. And I couldn't do it with love anymore. It was too much. And so, like, talking about embodiment, this is not what my body was asking for. So I had to listen to that. And that was hard, just saying no, when you feel like, well, I shouldn't be like telling someone no who has a lot of money and knows what to do. But so that was a challenge point. And then, you know, thankfully, because it is, a lot of these are some, you know, they do include some raw processing. Like, I had my older brother died almost 10 years ago. And that was a challenge that I feel he is still, he's very present with me. He was suffering a lot during his lifetime, and that was a challenge. And, you know, there's thinking about emotional stuff. Here's something kind of interesting, because you think about guilt, like, should I be creating? You know, my brother was extremely brilliant, extremely creative, not able to create. You know, there's some guilt there that could be debilitating at one level of perspective and metabolization, right? But then when you, there's a level of like persistence and commitment, like, no, I told myself I was going to keep making a daily thing, so I'm going to keep doing that. If I need to integrate and incorporate that experience of guilt, loss, grief, upset, and process, then okay, but I'm going to keep going. And And then about a year, almost a year and a half ago, my brother visits me in dreams, like not very frequently, but kind of like when I need to or when he needs to. Visited me in a dream where, you know, towards the end, and we were having a good hug and like a little cry. Towards the end, he said he was actually got very bitter. And he said, you got to write books. Or our dad got to write books, which my dad wrote a lot of books. And you're getting to write books now. And I never got to write a book. And I want to write a book with you. And so he showed me this manuscript. So I saw the cover and I started to subtly wake up just in time to like remember and have some cognizance and lucidity while it was still going. So I like typed it into my phone, the title of this book. And it was powerful. I'm going to actually just say the name because it's something in progress. And I feel, even though it's like, it's not totally written yet, it's special and it touches on exactly what we're talking to. And maybe it'll be a little kick in the butt for me to just like reconnect with him about finishing this book. And it's called The Pompeian Times. And right, you know, Pompeii, Mount Vesuvius,
yeah, that's
right, the eruption, this volcano, right? It's about how we're in these Pompeian times. But the volcano is not necessarily this physical, like, earthbound volcano that's in the crust of the earth. It's this volcano that's in this collective consciousness that we can see it. It doesn't, when you see mass shootings, when you remember, we remember Columbine, right? When that was
right.
An event that people mourned for like over months and
forever
years, right? And now these things are happening on a more than daily basis, right? I mean, my brain can't really digest that. I mean, in just saying that, I'm like, I feel disoriented, right? So we're living in these explosive. There's a volcano that's rumbling in our spirit, in our inner world. And then the question is like, where are the vents? Where can we create or provide vents so that they don't have to come out as destructive eruptions, but they can, we can let off steam and in a healthy way that there's not this wake of total annihilation and destruction. So that's a project. I got the broad strokes from my brother, Jacob, you know, like started writing on that. So it's, you know, how do you take someone like you lost a family member and you have to create your, you know, I would never stop feeling grief over this for the rest of my life. But how do I take it as a creator and someone who cares and wants to honor like everything I'm handed in my life, be it grief or be it pleasure and joy, you know, and how do I make something out of it that might be helpful, that might seed life, at least inner life.
Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah. And then there's also the 3-4 dimensions of like, fuck, how do I get this book there? Like, I don't have the distribution of like Penguin and all that shit. So there's that stuff too. That's a challenge, but that I feel that's been met over time with especially this work with NAMI. They're who I mentioned earlier, incredibly supportive. They've been supporting me while I make the book. So I'm not like, I love selling the books. I love sharing them. But also my having an income is not dependent on how I hawk my wares. So that's actually incredible just to have someone that's supportive of the creativity that like I'll be able to create them. And I don't have that kind of existential threat that you'd have like if you were like food business. That's really common, like you're on this, people have been, and I wasn't, I'm in life, my bars had a great shelf life. You know, I can imagine like someone who sells like homemade salsa, fuck, and you have to sell it within a week or something it goes bad, like I can't even imagine. So yeah, to I mean, there is like, we talked about worshiping money, but there is that need to be able to ground and to have sustenance. And I think you find that over time. And when you keep going, you gotta be persistent. The job I have now as maybe a prompt, I thought that I connected with the organization really well, and then I think they got busy essentially, and I got disheartened because I was like, oh, they're not like responding to my emails. Maybe they don't actually want to work together. And then I had a conversation with someone, and they said, well, maybe they're just busy. And so I sent another email, like, maybe. Like, I got nothing to lose. And then they offered me to work with them, and now I'm able to create this material and these children's books, which if I had been disheartened and just said, well, like, yeah, maybe they're just not interested. You know, and like, so that was also important to go actually a little bit outside of my disheartened mind and say, well, maybe they're just busy. And from that, being able to say, to get all this support in creating this material, where I can say like, yeah, you should buy my books and get them. And like, I'm not gonna starve if you don't. Like, that's the big thing. You know, just set up that, like, do whatever you want. And also to be able to carry that attitude and embodied sensation, even when the third dimension is not showing you that. That's also an art and practice too, right?
Is Butterfly on Books a publishing company?
Yeah, that's just when I make books, they're Butterfly and Books, and that's the spelling is Butterfly on Books, but it's from this character, the butterfly in, who's part butterfly and part lion. Try to look for a
butterfly on.
Yeah, the butterfly in. Yeah. Let me get a picture. Hold on. It's worth
the it. The reason why I ask, we can wait.
Here. This guy. He's the butterfly in.
Oh, that's the that's one of the covers I saw.
Yeah.
The reason why I ask is because to me, it seems like everything that you need for this thing to blow up and to scale is already there. It's just the question of it happening, which, from my perspective, is a matter of you envisioning it, you envisioning the blow up, because the books are there. The content is quality, and if one person's bought, so what I've always reminded, and not that I'm here to coach you, but what
do
I'm
it,
just to
do
just
it.
To share.
I know that there's someone like one, maybe I need to hear it, and two, maybe there are, you know, other people who need to hear it too. I'll take a free coaching session. Yeah.
What I've always, this is more just me sharing my perspective, but yeah. What I've always reminded myself is that if there's one person that's willing to give me money as a customer, then I'm already there. Like, if one person's doing it, then it's just as easy for 1,000 or 100,000 or 1,000,000 people to see value just as this one person did.
Yeah.
And it literally is just about, like, what am I doing? Am I just seeing one or 10 or 15 people as customers, or am I envisioning what this is as a glorious adventure? And I see this in your work, that this is huge. This is important.
Thanks.
And if anyone's listening to this, they, like, right now they're at the price point that you should go buy them all on the website, because as you grow, it might not stay as cheap as it is. But I would highly recommend anybody listening to this to go to Butterflyin. So it's Butterflyin.
Yeah, but you can spell it for spelling. Just say Butterfly on, and you'll know the spellings. Yeah.
My invitation is to set up an affiliate program as well, that could be, you know, there's so many people out there that are influencers of parents,
right?
You know, and maybe they influence their parents because they make recipes for the parents, and that's what they're selling. But they also would want to recommend children's books. And yeah. If you had a way for them to recommend it in an easy way where they get a little split, then they're going to do it. And that's like, that's what I mean. Like, everything's here. It's just a matter of clearing the path so that it can flow into being.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Because I do feel, I mean, one, I do have that intrinsic property that it's just fun for me to hold the books in my hand, but I also feel strongly connected to this, like, in my lifetime I do want to disseminate and distribute these wildly, because it's not like, yeah, because I just look at the world, like, you know, there we need a reprogram, and it's there's a call that I feel like I've been able to make gently and consciously with each of these books from a different angle. So I do feel like it's part of it. I'm excited. I also love, for anyone listening too, if you're in LA, I love doing book readings too, and I'm really excited in beginning of May I'm gonna get to read, this will be, you're talking about blowing up, I don't know what will happen, but I'm gonna get to go to a school of like 450 kids and like read a book to all of them, like at an assembly. So that's just fun. I mean, it'll be like kindergarten through eighth, you know? So, I mean, I could see that happening. I could also see some of these being made into film and animation. And I got really, here's a tangent, but I can't not say it because I was so inspired by, about a week ago, I saw this movie I'd never heard of. It won an Oscar though, called The Tale of Princess Cayuga. Strongly recommend it. Have you heard of it?
No.
It's so good. Really beautifully animated book or movie, and soundtrack was just fantastic. And it, you know, that got me going too. It was like, yeah, film is also a really powerful medium messaging, and that was just such a well-made movie. And then I can start putting my music in it and stuff, which I do too. And I wanted to say also on my, I think through my Instagram, it's easy to find on the link tree, but there's an animation I made for the Listen to the Land book, which some really talented musical friends sat in on that. So I narrated the book, and it's kind of like a meditative narration of that book. So yeah, no, I appreciate it, and I just love it. It's a real blessing when you can take like a piece of life and actually the processing, your own personal processing of it, is what you get to share with people. Is you've taken, you know, like I have been making art for most of the 37 years that I've been here on the planet. I've been making art and I've been writing. And so eventually, like, you develop that confidence to just put it out there. And it's not because you think it's so good, it's because, like, you don't know when you're not going to be able to anymore. And so you just better do it.
And so, it's because the world needs it. If you don't do it,
yeah,
how many children are going to go without these stories?
That's it. Yeah. And that's an important, too, for, I don't know, I feel like your audience may be people who share energies of consciousness in whatever form. And I feel like that's really important to remember. Like, before you receive that, whatever you feel like that external validation is, to be passionate and steady, allow for slowness of development and seed to grow, because, like, you know, there aren't mistakes. Whatever, even if whatever you're working on now, whatever happens to actually, it, like, we just have, like, my friend says, the path is wiser than the walker upon it, right? And there's not, it's not a mistake that you're doing whatever you're doing. If you're doing something to help reprogram adults or children, and you feel like, just why don't I get paid the same as someone who's like a drop shipper for like, you know, just,
yeah, trading Bitcoin.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, just keep hanging on to that, because into what you're doing, because there is value, and just to recognize the, you know, right, and without the angle of like, well, I don't need money, and pushing it away, but just saying like, there's a reason why I'm here, there's a reason I'm brought to this moment, that I had this idea that no one else does it in this form, right? There's 8 billion people in the world and so much dysregulation. Like, even if you see health food companies, you see influencers who talk about health who are already, from whatever you think is, look successful, like, they're not touching the 8 billion in a big enough way. Sorry, like, you know, it's like, everyone has to expand. So it's, you know, don't feel belittled. You know, there are spiritual teachers that they're doing enough. My voice is not relevant because they're preaching the wisdom. You know, well, that, well, apparently it's whatever is happening at this moment. There's still a lot. I'm not trying to call in like destructive realities, but I don't have to say much to look at like where the world is right now and say like, yeah, it's not going to hurt to have more voices of peace and of consciousness and connectivity and of breathfulness and awareness. So that, I would say, that's something that I've had to remind myself a lot of over the years, of like, yeah, this, I don't know, I don't feel the world meeting this in the way I want it to, but I can't stop now. You know, I can't. And if I had, like, this book that I'm going to read to 450 kids, like, I'll tell you, like, it's story, because all of these books have intimacy in them. They, you know, I hope I can just also maintain my emotional grounding in this. Because this, a week before, basically, that book, it's the book I'm going to read is All Kinds of Hugs. And it's about all the ways you can hug people, right? Can be the way you look at them, the way you smile at them, or just the way you share silence with them, or by giving them something, or by receiving something, right? All these ways we can give hugs. And that story was, I read it, I got to read it to my friend that I wrote Ockles and Walkles with, my friend James Mahaley, and he gave me, I read it on the phone to him. He gave me one line of insight into the words and how I might be able to reshape some of the text. And based on that, it was like, then when he said that, like a light bulb went on in my head, and I rewrote like 70% of the book. And that, he died like 5 days later. So this was like the last, like, of many, like, he was also a children's book author. It was a last of many conversations over 11, 12 years that we had. And, you know, there's this preciousness. Like, wow, fuck. What if we hadn't had that? Excuse my language. I don't know. If we hadn't had that conversation 5 days before, like, the experience of 450 kids would be different. You know, whatever mm-hmm. it is, whatever they're... resonance with this book is when I get to read it to them, you know, and you know, whoever else ends up checking it out. But there's this calling to like how precious things are, and the fact that we can feel and we can create out of that, and we can allow ourselves to be motivated in a way that, thinking like my 24-ish or 25-ish year old self, that was disheartened because I couldn't get stuff up in a gallery, right? If I had just been like, I can't get stuff up in a gallery, this is not the path for me. I'm just not going to make, my art isn't very good. And you know, that's just what it is. And I'm going to find something else to do, but just find a little thing to do every day. Right. Like you mentioned, like 4,000 something drawings from that just on Instagram alone. Like you find something little that has enough intrinsic value to you to keep going. And you see how, like, and you kind of, we can kind of give away. Now, I'm not trying to coach either, but like, and not you, but Forever needs to hear it. And maybe I'm reminding myself too, but like, if we can give up that sensation of like the immediate gratification, right? Oh, this gallery didn't want it. 10 galleries didn't want it. Doesn't mean I'm not supposed to be doing this. You know, no galleries want the work. I've been an artist my whole life. There's another thing I'm going to share on this. Like, you can cut me off anytime. You know that. So it's your show. But I remember when I was in my mid-late 20s, and I met this guy who was a life insurance broker. And we met up for tea. He invited me up for tea. And I thought, like, I asked him, we had a little chat, and I asked him, like, how long have you been doing this? You seem so, you seem like you were born a life insurance broker. You know, so you are so comfortable with this. And he said, I said, oh, about a year and a half or two. Like, what? You know, he said, and then he goes, I went to school for acting. I said, oh, okay. And then I thought to myself, starting out, whatever that means, as really being intentional about creating art and sharing it. Doing at least 20 years, you know, by then. And I didn't have a 20th of the confidence that he projected into that. And I thought, well, how interesting, right? So, right, that's part of it too. Like, how do we present ourselves in a way, and we have it in, embodied, not like false concepts. And now I'm thinking, like, okay, probably, maybe now, like, my a little bit wiser self would have been like, yeah, I can see through the bullshit with him. But at that point, it was impressive, you know? So, but when you can build that really heart-centered and heartfelt sense of purpose, it can also, you know, carry, you talked about difficulties and carrying you through difficulties that we face. Yeah.
Exactly. I think we're all at that edge too, right? We're all at the edge of our comfort zone. Wherever that is, but that's where there's always that edge that pushing through it, it's a choice. And it's not something we need to be doing every single day.
Yeah.
Do you have anything else to add before we pop off here?
Let me take a minute to breathe it in and see if anything else wants to come out.
He is Oshri Hakak. Is that how you say it?
It's close enough. Yeah.
Oshrihakak on Instagram. You have a YouTube?
Yeah. You can look up my name, first last name in YouTube, and channel will come up. I feel like there was maybe one more thing, but maybe there always is. So, this has been really fun. I really appreciate all your questions, and it's fun to share. And, I'll say anyone who has kids in their lives, it would be like, just know, I really take this stuff seriously. Like, if I made a children's book, it's because I wanted to have some kind of healing presence in your world. So, and if you buy one and doesn't resonate, I want to know why. I want to learn, because I'm in this, you know, and I feel so strongly connected to the fact that our children are our future. The fact is, like, we're not. I think Kim Peel did a great sketch about, they were talking about, like, elementary school teachers as if they were NFL players and just, like, you know, getting paid the same as NFL players. And unfortunately, it's not the reality, but that is in proportion to value, what is actually valuable, that makes a lot more sense, right? Not trying to say that athleticism isn't a phenomenal thing to appreciate, but the fact that, well, the future of the planet is
right.
Kids. So, yeah. The other thing I mentioned, I have this, I'll put it up on my Linktree too. It's a mental health toolbox. It has like free coloring sheets and PDFs and downloads. Not downloads, like you can download on your computer and print it, but they're from downloads from here. One of them is called Feeling It Out. It's for every emotion. Let's invite non-judgment, gratitude, and intention to open up together. So that's the acronym, Feeling It Out. And the back, so it goes through how to share and open up. And then the back page of that is kind of a very as distilled form you could get of what the core of EMDR and helping kids identify archetypes that help them feel resourced through a safe space, nourishing figure, wise figure, and a protector. And also I added one, which is a joyful figure. So that's all on that mental health toolbox that I'll put on my Linktree. And yeah, so fun. Thank you. This is like show and tell for me. So I just had a blast.
Amazing. Thank you for that meditation as well. I didn't really get to comment on that because we rolled on to the next thing. Yeah. But that was really great, feeling the support of everybody and just the way that evolved, you know, and then it's giving it back and then the ancestors and then the children. That was a really amazing experience. And so if anyone's listening, comment on what your favorite part of this episode was and definitely make it on over to Butterfly on Books. Oshri, you're doing amazing stuff and it's been fun watching you. And it's going to be fun seeing your journey continue on.
Thank you so much.
Take care, everybody.